Welcome to the Fireside Chat. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Paul Sporer and Nick Pollock.
What is happening? Welcome to the Fireside Chat. My name is Nick Pollock. I could feel the dim light on my robe, and I look across the room and I see the wonderful Paul Sporer. Hi, Paul. Thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me, Nick. It's great to be by the fire, even through the old beanie on. You know, it's getting toasty. I want to be real cozy and toasty.
Yeah. Here, what is the mug that you're holding today?
Oh, well, it's a beautiful Fangraphs mug that you can get turned into an app. Yeah, it is. It is just a lovely Fangraphs mug with some nice coffee in it. You know, I'm not. You know, I love my Red Bull, but you had to get a coffee by the fire and just really embrace the heat and the calming nature of everything.
Absolutely, I'm with you. I'm holding my PL logo with a. With my photo of me pitching at Brandeis.
I love that.
And no, you cannot buy that. That is for my parents and me. And that is it. So welcome everybody to the Fireside Chat. And it's kind of funny for me to say like this is the eighth episode because we've been doing this since what, 2019, I believe?
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know, 2018, actually.
18, yeah.
18, absolutely wild. But today we are going to talk about the ERA leaders. These are the guys who you just look at it and you say, okay, well, these are the ones who are leading the majors in ERA. These are qualified starters only. Mm-hmm. And which are the ones that we think like, okay, this is just weird early season stuff. And what is, oh, hey, there's actually something we should be really paying attention. Now, this is something strange that people might not know about me. I'm curious about your take on this, Spore. I don't look at ERA and WHIP numbers a ton during the year. There's certain times I do calibration and go, oh, I didn't realize he was doing that well overall. Mm-hmm. But I'm more of the journey. What are the performance of the pitches, those kind of elements that generally speak to what an ERA would be, what a WHIP would be. And really when we talk about FIP or so, I'm already aware of the K minus walk rate and the home runs allowed and everything along those lines that I actually don't really take time looking at the ERA and WHIP leaders during the year. Do you do that as well? Or is this is it a different process for you?
I still say stay pretty in tuned with it. You know, doing the daily SP chart with the recommendations, digging into the game logs, I generally have a pretty good mm-hmm. idea. Now, they don't guide everything. You could see somebody with a 6 ERA get a 3X recommendation, meaning they're recommended in 10s, 12s, and 15s. That's how I set up the board.
Nice.
So not that kind of 3X for anybody. Get your minds out of the gutter. You're listening to a Nick Pollock production
here. Three times.
When I recommend them across the board, they might have poor ERA. So I don't use it as a guiding factor, but I am pretty generally aware of where guys are at. And I especially like to what I call game logging, where I want to dig in and see how an ERA is made up. Because I think it is so important. Because I think part of the reason that you're saying that you do this, that you're not fully in tune with it, is because you want to know how they're pitching, what the skills are, because you want to know what the ERA might be going forward. So I'm very much in line with you there. It's just that I generally know the ERAs that they have currently.
Too. I can certainly make guesses. Yeah. I'm like, okay, this is, and I think we're going to see in this leaderboard of guys that like are in the twos, and I see you got like a 224 versus a 244 in my head. I'm just like, yeah, that's the same.
Absolutely.
It's you know, a six inning, zero run game versus a one run game. I don't treat them any differently in my head. And by the way, you should call that a Vin Diesel, the triple X.
That's actually
that a Vin amazing. For win too. It's all right there for you.
Wait. What is a win? What is that?
I don't know what a win is actually.
Yeah, me neither. Okay, it's fireside. Relax. Sip your coffee. Relax. I definitely didn't get four.
There is
amazing
a fire
starts
here,
yesterday.
It's not supposed to be you. Okay.
With zero wins, I definitely didn't get that. I'm not third in ERA, fifth in WHIP, almost dead last in wins. That's definitely not happening, Nick. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, continue. I'm sorry. By the way, let me interject one quick thing. My fault for the topic this week. Not that it's a bad topic, but we were supposed to have SP ranking comparisons. I didn't quite get them done before I went out of town. They will be up this week. You'll get a little May treat, and then next week, Nick and I, our primary topic will be
no need to apologize.
Some bigger comparisons.
A good one for us to really kind of assess certain things. And
absolutely,
the you know, when it comes to ERA watching, what's also a conversation I know we're going to have is we often say, okay, they're pitching in this level, but you know, we know they're going to regress, but how far?
Yep.
How it works with the regression is not just a this is what he was, so thus this is what he is now. or a, oh, you just add on a couple of things and that's fine. It goes like a pendulum. It's not everything impacts everything else. So you see, for example, in Minaga, he's at 0.96 right now, ERA. That's, of course, with this 93% left on base rate and a 5% home run or fly ball rate, which, by the way, do you remember the biggest knock on Imanaga coming in?
Nick, that is my specific issue still. And maybe issue isn't even the right word because I forget. I think it might have been on the SP chart from Monday in the comments. I mentioned this exact thing. Oh, because somebody roasted themselves because in the comments he had said, I think this is where all the Imanaga regression comes, you know, meaning that he was facing Atlanta in Atlanta. And then he came back on Monday night and said, yeah, nice call. Again, self-roasting, which I always appreciate.
Hey, but then,
And that's exactly what I said. I said, hey, to take you off the hook a little bit, Imanaga was dodging the proverbial raindrops with a two whip. And I still have some concerns or at least some intrigue about where the homers are going to be in the summer, because that was the number one thing. And he is running a 5% homer to fly ball rate is Imanaga, despite a 36% ground ball rate. Like the ball is still in the air. They're going to come. And Nick, I always have this real internal struggle, right? Of the mathematics versus like how baseball is. And I don't want to get all boomery of like, I've been watching this game for 40 years and I know how everything goes. First off, I definitely don't. Yeah. But one of the things that I have the disconnect with is they talk about when you're using the projections, you're supposed to say like, okay, if he's been an 0.96 to this point, Imanaga, then using the projection means you should view him as his projection from here forward, meaning like a mid three ERA and a 1.20s something type whip. Whereas a lot of us might be like, well, isn't he going to be worse to maybe get up to 3.50 ERA? And I understand that that's a mathematically fallacious principle to think that like he like it's built in there and it's going to come back to him. But in baseball practice, it does happen. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. And we know it based on this particular principle. 10 starts, you're great. 10 starts, you're medium. 10 starts, you're terrible. And what that means is your stuff profile, not necessarily the results, because Cy Young seasons happen where guys might have three bad starts. That means they navigated the 10 starts where nothing was working and they either got lucky, figured something out, or just, you know, the offenses lined up properly. We are seeing the best of Imanaga. He will have his down starts. Now, he might not get all the way back up to a mid threes with his composite ERA, but I think there will be some give back where the regression monster, whatever you want to call it, will get him. Mm-hmm. And it's not because I don't believe in what he's doing, but the ball's in the air a ton. The fly balls are going to go out in the summer. But how do you deal with that principle I'm talking about with, like, mathematically, you're not supposed to say, well, there is going to be catch up of the regression versus knowing that that happens in baseball practice a lot. Did I explain that right?
No, I understand completely of just how do we approach it of we have a season long projection and we say, great, is this, you know, these this month and change, is that part of the full projection picture? Yeah. Or is it actually him being something different than the projections expected and should we alter them?
Exactly. More concise way to put it there.
There's a reason why Barrios is the great undulator.
Yep.
He always would get there. Same with Chris Bassett, right? And that is, you know, it is mathematically sound because that's treating humans like robots a bit. And humans have a tendency to flow in certain ways. Obviously, as you mentioned, Cy Young seasons happen. Other times also someone just gets bad luck the entire year.
The Barrios is down here 2 years ago, like where it never came back.
Yeah, exactly. And then all of a sudden last year it was fine. Barrios is weird. We're not going to talk about Barrios today. What we're going to do is we're going to focus still on Imanaga, this is the very interesting thing to me. Yes, he's going to allow more home runs. It's going to happen. As you mentioned, the weather is not going to help him as he continues on. There'll be days that really it's just going to, the wind's not going to help him. It's going to be there. It's fine. There's two aspects of him that are very interesting to me. One, the home run problem was a problem because he wasn't pitching to his best strengths with his four seamer. And it's something that I preached a lot in the offseason saying, look, Imanaga was around the zone a ton with his four seamer. And once he goes upstairs exclusively, that's actually going to help his flat four seamer and actually make it so that you see a lot of fly balls. That's great. And that's the reason why it's a 5% home run fly ball rate, because he allows so many of them and they were pop-ups. And that's why he has a low BABIP, and that's why he's as good as he is. I mean, it's a 273 BABIP, which actually is arguably low a little bit.
Based on the ball rate.
It's a 40% ground ball rate, which is like, okay, that's not that high. So that is going to still be a thing that helps him with this. The other aspect is, you know, I can't help but think about this. The WBC, the final against the U.S., Imanaga pitched that game. Do you remember the runs he allowed?
I don't.
It was a Trey Turner home run. But what
Captain
was it
America.
Off? It was off of his slider. And he's not throwing it. You know, and I actually remember in spring training, when Imanaga was allowing home runs, it was off of a bad slider.
So he's learned something there, because that slider's down to a 7% usage. It's really been fastball splitter with show me breaking balls.
And I've been saying, hey, I want to see that slider or curve, because I know there's going to be a night that the splitter isn't there. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a night when the four seamer just is low and you're not commanding it as well. Like, I need to know that there's a backup option. And maybe there still is, and he's just not going to touch it unless he needs to, and he hasn't needed to yet.
Sure.
But there is something to be said. Maybe the slider was a big problem for the home runs, and he's just not throwing that. So I'm actually really curious about this. I wonder if this does hold for a decent amount. And it comes with projections with a guy like Imanaga. Like, what kind of projections? I mean, all the Japanese pitchers, it's just really hard to hold on to that.
Totally. You know what I reconciled it with Imanaga?
Yeah.
Coming into the year, I thought, you know, like mid threes, maybe upper threes because of the homers. Mm-hmm. And we'll, you know, low 120s whip. I've now kind of reassessed him into the Joe Ryan category.
Yes, exactly right. I'm with you completely on Joe Ryan.
That's where I see him now, where yes, the home runs are going to be there, and there'll be an occasional year like 2023 where they just sting them a little bit too much. But for the most part, they're going to be solo shots and homers that aren't going to kill him because he keeps the bases clean. And thus, I have reassessed Imanaga at a higher level. And that will be shown when those rankings go up this week, which I think should be no later than Thursday if you're listening to this. Tuesday or Wednesday, depending on when it comes out. Check Fangraphs there. But yeah, that's where I put him now, is in that Joe Ryan category.
I love that so much. The main difference, I mean, by the way, they're both... So Ryan has a flatter four-seamer. That's really one of the flattest in the majors. Mm-hmm. It's great. That means that you can succeed upstairs. You can get more pop-ups with those pitches upstairs. And Imanaga has a 88th percentile, not the 99th of Joe Ryan. But Imanaga has a 91st percentile vert on his four-seamer too. Yeah. Oh, man. This is what makes it such a magical pitch and why it's been able to limit the home runs, I think, a little bit better than Joe Ryan so far. Also, I would say the splitter is better for Imanaga than it is for the Ryan, which is why there is a separation. But I think entering the year, this is the comp I had in my head. It was like, it's Joe Ryan.
Yep.
Like, and maybe with a better splitter and like better control. I don't know. Like,
thankfully, you know, because I was a little tepid on Imanaga, but in my second main event, I waited on pitching a lot, and he ends up being my number two. He's now my ace, of course, but he's my number two behind Bybee. And, you know, I'm glad I still trust enough. I wasn't on the Joe Ryan thing at the very beginning of the year. It took me a little bit of seeing him, and then now I'm like lockstep right there.
Yeah,
I had
Ryan mid-30s because I was just like, I don't know if I trust the secondaries enough. Then I saw him in the spring. I was like, oh, you're throwing harder and you have a better slider now. Like,
so much. I gained a lot of confidence in Ryan from the spring too. No, I totally agree with you there. Yeah,
Joe Ryan's killing it for me in Tab Wars. Thank you so much, CBS Points, for being the absolute Joe Ryan league. It's great.
Well, he's been amazing too. So what do we do then with a sub one ERA on May 14th from a guy who had some hype, but not a ton? Hmm? Do we do anything with Imanaga? Do you try to sell high? I think you could sell pretty high.
Right? This is like, try to do trades in your leagues. Try to it's so hard.
And that's why I always push back on not just saying, well, trade from your, whenever someone says, I have, you know, five great outfielders, I can only play three or four of them. Well, trade. If it were that easy, they would have done that. So I try not to just say trade, but would you maybe sell high and try to go for like a big bat on Imanaga?
I guess what I'm getting at is, especially guys that are not de facto in the preseason as good, are always going to be just, you're not going to be able to quote unquote sell high. as much as I personally am buying high on certain guys, like the guy who rosters him is not going to sell him for middling. Like you're going to have to pay the premium or something. So there's always going to be a disconnect. If your player who wasn't assigned as a top 15 starter in the preseason is pitching like one, you as the manager are going to think of him as that and trying to get something for it. The person on the outside who doesn't roster him is not going to consider him that. And there's just going to be a disconnect. So it's really
I think Imanaga has been so good, though.
I hope so.
You can't.
I might be in a league or two of mine because I have, you know, I'm always looking to solidify my offense more during the year. But I'll say this, unless you're actually getting like top 15 SP value back, I would, just because I think personally there are a lot of surprising options with pitching this year, as it's always, there's always things happening and get the quality of pitching at the bottom is way better than it used to be in 12 teamers these days. And I would cash that in with Imanaga personally.
And then just keep playing. Yeah. We don't have to go over a bunch of names of potential hitters, but like, I think you could do a one for one trade where you could really get a nice big bat.
I'm not talking about has that backup is able to afford it. That's always the thing with trades. I want to move on to a couple other names here.
Yeah.
It actually is so interesting. No one who was consensus, I would say top 30 starting pitcher. Come and say Imanaga. I mean, for me, he was like right outside my 30. So I imagine the consensus wasn't there. Mm-hmm. Top five starters of ERA are outside the top 30 in the preseason. So you have Imanaga, Ronaldo Lopez, Ranger Suarez, Seth Lugo, and Javier Assad.
Dude, outside of Imanaga, those are all out of the top 70.
Yeah, pretty wild.
And that's only Suarez, Lugo. Lopez and Assad, you know, I'm a Raylo idiot and thankfully getting lucky on that, although we'll keep an eye on the back. Assad completely off the radar. Let's stay with the Cubs real quick and talk Assad, kind of bookend here on the 1-5. What are we doing with him? What are we seeing? He is a finesse guy. He is riding the hot BABIP and left on base rate. But is there anything here to latch on to, or is this pure Vargas rule with Javier Assad?
This is Vargas rule. I mean, and arguably, I even have him as a bottom of questionable start tomorrow because he goes against Atlanta. So you're listening to this in the morning on Wednesday. Yeah, Assad is a questionable start on that Wednesday because
I agree.
It's Atlanta. You know, it's tough. And
then he gets Atlanta twice in a row here.
Oh, is that right?
It's a home and home with them, the way the schedule breaks. So thanks a lot, schedule makers there. It is a two-step next week.
Yeah.
So you get a trip to St. Louis after the second Atlanta start for Assad. But I don't know. That's scary.
I know it sounds crazy to drop someone who has a 170 ERA and a 1.
I understand.
Like, I don't want to start him for two straight starts. And is Assad that good? No. He's a command guy, and command guys sometimes have these runs and sometimes it goes their way. He has a negative 10 hit luck on his sinker right now. If you don't know hit luck, it's a pitcherless stat of we look at every single pitch and pitch quality and say, cool, based on the pitches you've thrown and the at-bats you've had, how many hits should you have allowed or not based on the single pitch?
Like the profile of the batted ball? The
probabilities of the pitch itself.
Not even with the batted ball.
Contact, just about based on who you're, like the quality of the pitch, assuming an average hitter, all the situations, whatever, count is taken into account. But just based on PLV, we assign a probability for everything. And we kind of put it all together. And just so you know, sinkers have a plus zero on league average.
Okay.
So it's not like something that is completely wild or whatever. No, we made this work. Minus 10 is 99th percentile on all sinkers.
In favorability.
This is hit luck of like.
This is for Assad.
He's allowed 10 fewer hits on a sinker than he should have so far.
And there's your 244 BABIP.
Yeah, pretty much.
Completely. I guarantee you had 10 hits. It goes up to what, 270?
Overall, his minus 9 hit luck is 90th percentile right now. Wow. Which is, I mean, it's for me, it's a good way of looking at BABIP because there are certain guys that deserve to have a good BABIP.
Exactly.
Or a bad one, right? And to be able to look at hit luck and say, like, okay, based on the quality of pitches as he's actually thrown, he's performing over his head. Assad doesn't have anything that misses bats. I'm not even kidding. His top four pitches that are the pitches he throws at least 10% of the time, none of them are over 10% swing strike rate. None of them. His ICR on his sinker is 21%. And that does make me understand more about the hit luck of like, the contact is good.
Sure.
So maybe that you know, he should have a minus on that. But why the heck is it 20.1%? He's throwing these sinkers down the middle.
Exactly. Like,
is this that good? His mistake rate is 16%, which is absurdly bad. You see anything over 10%, like that's a bad mistake rate. Double the chance of allowing a hit down the middle of the plate, and he's getting away with it. Movement is not exceptional. There's something just weird with Assad, and I'm glad it's working, but this is not lasting, and no. I'm so out on Assad.
Yeah, I mean, I am too. I root for guys when they're running hot. I'm never trying to be like nasty about it, but you got to be realistic about it. And I know you're not either. Obviously, you're always looking at positivity with things, but like, again, we have to be honest here with Assad. He's running hot, and with the back-to-back starts being unusable against Atlanta twice in a row, he is a cut, and that someone might go scoop him. We'll let them jump on that grenade, and then maybe you can check back in with Assad. Who else really jumps out to you on this board?
I mean, there's some that's kind of fun. I didn't realize this. At 23 is Cole Irvin at 290, and Tyler Anderson at 292. And there's Zach Littell
more there.
And actually, I do want to hit on Zach Littell. We're going to do that quickly after this break. Right. So Cole Irvin, Tyler Anderson, Zach Littell. These are guys to me that I just consider Tobies. They're matchup dependent. Tyler Anderson for me had a nice run against some weak opponents, and he's still able to go six innings, has had some nice changeups. I think that's something to consider, but not really. I mean, both Anderson and Irvin are low strikeout guys.
Yep.
They've had some good moments. Irvin had his curveball kind of for a moment. Doesn't really go deep into games. At least Irvin is going deeper. Is there one of those two between Irvin and Anderson that we're going to get into Littell that you are in on moving forward?
Maybe a little bit more on Irvin because the team context supports him. I will say I am impressed. You know, he got bombed out in the first couple starts. Or not bombed out, but knocked around a bit. Mm-hmm. 9 earnings in 10 innings there. 14 hits against KC in Boston. And people are thinking, well, this isn't working really. And then he's reeled off 5 pretty nice starts, winning the last 4 of them. In fact, the only reason he didn't win the other was because Cole Irvin only went 4 2/3. So he could be on a 5-win streak if he hadn't gone that extra third of an inning. But between those two, yeah, you got to go Irvin over Anderson just for the win probability added because of the team support there.
Yeah.
But they're both very much just standard streamers. Team streamers in 15-team context. I don't think you can cut either of them when you're not using them, Anderson nor Irvin. But Irvin, I have a little bit more intrigue in just because of Baltimore.
So after asking this, I realized something that I did you a disservice. Because if Grayson Rodriguez comes back this weekend.
Oh, Swerving Irvin gets murked, right? He has to. It's definitely him. It's definitely
him. But the problem is, I mean, the last 4 starts... last 5, actually, for Cole Irvin is going to shock. It's going to shock everyone here. He led 9 runs in his first 2 games, but then 4 across his last 5.
Yeah.
And do the Orioles just go to a 6-man then? Because you can't really stop that, can you?
You're not going to put Burns on a 6, though. Or maybe Bradish, you don't mind the extra day off. With Means, you don't mind the extra day off. I don't know.
Why don't you put Burns on a 6? I understand you're missing the one. I get the understanding, like from you just want to see him as much as possible. But with everyone talking about health and stuff, and I don't know, you might do that.
That's fair. I mean, if they're open to it, and you know, it doesn't mess him up either. By the way, where are his strikeouts? Can we get those going?
That's a weird conversation for another time. But we'll talk next week. He'll be okay. He threw a lot of sliders all of a sudden.
They do have 7 games next week, which does set up a little bit more easily to run a 6, at least for the first week.
Right. Also, because you don't know how much you know, the throw, you want to make him get some rest. Yeah.
If Irvin smokes Toronto, I do tend to agree that you can't really take him out. Like, you can't run these guys into the ground for 6 months, you know, ball players in general, hitters and pitchers. Tell them it's a meritocracy, this, that, and the other, and then kick somebody like Irvin out when he's running this well, right? Like, I do get that. And so they do have to be careful with, you know, just saying, well, you lose your job now. So, yeah, I think they'll try the 6. You've sold me on that. I think that makes some sense to try the 6, see where it's at. Even if you do give Burns an occasional extra day, maybe that is a good idea because, hey, they're playing for October anyway, right? Like their playoff chances aren't really in any sort of grave danger. They want to get the best seeding that they can. So yeah, stick with Irvin for now. He gets Toronto this week. and then he'll line up for St. Louis next week as long as he stays in the bullpen or in the rotation and everything with Grayson on the way back.
And just a quick note on Tyler Anderson, the changeup is a 20%+ swing strike rate again, and that's kind of cool.
Did he find Mark Pryor's phone number again?
I think so, actually, yeah. He's someone that can go six innings for a quality start. Like quality start leagues, I think you favor Tyler Anderson here. Wins,
that's fair. With, and he gets a little Texas two-step here. That's an interesting challenge. Yeah, the next two starts are at Texas, at Houston. That will challenge Anderson, but yeah. I'm intrigued to see how he stands up to that.
Yeah, I actually had to drop Sandoval and Anderson out of my list, because what I do now is I just make it at the end. Anyone who was just a streamer for the week, I just had this massive tier. I had 21 pitchers this week.
Holy
just
smokes.
Like, it's just like not even a tier of like, you don't want to hold them, whatever. This is just go through this, and these are the ones for the week that are worthwhile, because it's not worth it to hold for 10 days. That's just how I feel with it.
No, I feel that, and that you have to be a lot more mindful of who you're holding. That's what we were saying about the Assad situation with the double,
exactly
the double Atlantas.
So going to Littell. Zach Littell has had a very interesting season. On some metrics that we all love, like K minus walk rate, he's killing it. It's over 20% K minus walk rate so far. 24% carry, 3.7% walk rate. I'm saying that decimal today, because it just keeps him above 20, okay? Then you have the ERA at 302, but then you have a 128 whip. You only have a 2-2 record because the Rays are not winning as many games. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about Littell? I don't know if I'm that interested.
Yeah, I've been modest on it, right? Like, he gets the recommendation, and it's usually 12s and deeper pretty consistently, but he's been kind of up and down when it comes to the real shallow formats there. Mm-hmm. And the league cutoffs for my daily SP chart are just general, right? 10, 12, and 15. Obviously, there can be odd number leagues and deeper than 15. It's really shallow, medium, deep leagues. But he's getting it done. And it's one of those things where sometimes there's that disconnect between like how it looks both on paper and when you watch him. Cause I don't know if you've watched any Zach Littell this year.
Oh yeah. But I've watched this. It's just like, what?
I'm not blown away. And so I look at the 254 FIP and I'm just kind of scratching my head like, huh, he's getting it done, but he's been a hit machine. Is it just control filling the zone and getting lucky on not allowing homers?
Well, yeah, I mean, the main thing with Littell is that it's slider focused. He's always been this way. 34% slider usage is pretty much the standard for Zach Littell. If anything, it's actually somewhat low to the 2020 through 2022 that we've seen. And it's been consistent ICR rates of being low. However, its home run fly ball rate is normally around 17%, and it's 7% this year.
There you go.
So I'm a little tepid on it. I think that his four-seamer just is not a good pitch. It's a dead zone fastball. He does locate it upstairs effectively. And when the slider does actually come down, I mean, I saw starts with Littell was just going up in arm side with his slider the entire game. And I just go, what? Like, is that the play? Like, I don't, that's so strange. There also are starts where the splitter actually does things. I mean, I'm surprised to see that it has a near 60% strike rate and a 21% swing strike rate.
That
obviously is a big deal. Surprising. However, when he does, does keep it in the zone at any point, it gets hit. So it's a back and forth there of that splitter. Is he's towing the line at the moment of just getting enough with it that I'm not so confident in. And the sinker, I think, is just not a good pitch. He throws that 17% of the time. It just doesn't jam right-handers. He tries to do front door hip stuff with against lefties. I don't think it's very good. Zach Littell to me is fine. We see these samples often in the beginning of the year where we're really trying to figure out, is this guy that good or not? I feel this is like a normal July run of like four games of 7-7-6-7 strikeouts. And otherwise it's all underneath seven strikeouts, right? Half of those games are those and the other half are not. It's not that good. And that, by the way, that run was against the Angels. Oh my gosh. Last five games. I'm actually going to say six, because at Coors on February 5th was nothing. So the six games were Coors, Angels, Tigers, White Sox, Mets. And then he faced the Yankees and he didn't look very good. Like,
do you think that Littell is, going back to our BABIP discussion with regards to like hit luck and everything, is he earning that with, just kind of filling the zone? What's that?
Plus six hit luck. So he's allowed six more hits than he should have, according to us. And I think
so that maybe that BABIP will start to come down.
Yeah, that's possible. There's a sweeper that is allowed. We're not good with sweepers. It's actually really sweepers have an inherent plus fives for whatever reason.
Okay.
So it's actually pretty normal. And so yeah, he's a plus six with us. We're fixing that. So plus one really for Littell. Slider is getting his average with us. Four seamer is allowing fewer hits than it should. Littell to me is just, it's not that great. And with the Rays also not winning enough games for it to justify like the win chance, right? I'm out on this.
The way the schedule's working, to talk about another double dip here, double Boston for Littell. I think in a 10, if you're not using it, it's the same as Assad. You cut him right now and then you check back in later if you really want. Right. But I don't love him in Fenway. If he stood tall in Fenway, I could maybe get behind the home start, but I'm probably just wanting to pass both Boston starts on Littell in shallow leagues. In 15s, I think you got to ride this out a bit more.
Right.
And keep that in mind. We're always kind of being mindful of what league type we're talking. In shallows, I'm okay moving on. Sometimes, and you talked about this with Assad, it's tough to cut somebody with a sub 2 ERA.
Right.
But sometimes you want to cut before the pain comes, right?
Exactly, like, right.
And that's hard to do. I get it. But don't just eat the regression starts. Like, you're not obligated to do that.
Right. And I understand sometimes you want to big brain it and it's too much. I'm like, that's why a Vargas rule exists. Like, okay, that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
Just then don't get too enamored that you don't after it. Like, for example, we were talking about this with Martin Perez. And Martin Perez is, that Vargas rule's over. We're moving on now after he had that hot start, right? Him and Marco Gonzalez were doing well in April. And the one that hasn't stopped is Ranger Suarez. It might surprise you. I had him at 40 this week. And a lot of people were not happy with that.
For a lot of people, I'm sure that was like 20 ranks too low.
Yeah, something along those lines. But the way I see it is just, I mean, Spore, you and I have gone through the ringer on Ranger Suarez. Like we saw the 2021 ridiculousness. We saw then 2022 and 2023 of just, all right, that's kind of who he is. And both those seasons, again, whip above 130. Now Ranger Suarez is a 150 ERA with a 0.72 whip, but he has a 28% K rate all of a sudden and a 4% walk rate. And the thing is, those stretches, though, where he's really good, that's kind of what he looks like. Yep. And then he goes away. Do you think that, I mean, there are some elements that are different, you could say, about Suarez right now. But do you feel that there's more that makes him sustainable through the year, that makes him more than a top 40 starter?
I'm struggling to see it. I forget exactly where I have him right now, and obviously things will still settle as I put the finishing touches on it. But it's not top 20, I'll tell you that, with Ranger Suarez. I think it's 37, so I'm like right there with you.
Oh, 37? Oh, man. Okay, cool.
Because we're trying to look forward. And you know what this reminds me of is when Brady Singer, quote-unquote, broke out in 2022, we were like,
in April.
Well, yeah, exactly, exactly. And it's like, well, is it a fundamental difference or is it the best of what that profile has to offer? And I think both with Singer in 2022 and so far this year, he's doing the same thing. It's the best of what this profile offers, not a fundamental change that jumps him a level. So that's where I'm at with Suarez. He's pitching some of his best ball. It's been great. There are a few differences, but there's not enough fundamental difference, right? His swing strike rate isn't even up a full point if you use the decimal. 9.4 to 10.3. You got to round up to even say it's up 1 point.
Sure.
The walk rate improvement is great. That's probably the most bankable thing. But then the 213 BABIP and 90% left on base rate, those aren't going to hold.
Yeah.
So what is he going to be the rest of the way? Probably about a 390 ERA with a 125 or higher whip on a good team that will continue to give him win probability. But he only has 7 dubs. Expect some pain with the dubs coming up. I bet there'll be some tough losses there or no decisions just because of the way the win luck breaks down. So I like Suarez. He's a keep everywhere. He's a full automatic start right now. Not a Vargas rule for me, but I'm not going to rank him 20th just based on this hot run. It doesn't, it doesn't make sense.
It doesn't. It's what's wild. I mean, there are two parts to this. One, I mean, Ranger Suarez, as far as like contact allowed, is absolutely incredible right now. ICR rates, again, ideal contact rate, to me, that is the greatest correlation to hits, is really low. And you can see the 100th percentile, I think, minus 16 hit luck right now for Wayne Suarez, which is crazy. But then I want to tell you that on all of these, when I see like a pitch that allows contact, like the average, you normally think for all pitches that are all fastballs are above 40%. And then the for secondaries is traditionally like 35%. Okay. So anything that's underneath those relatively is great. Slider, 33%. Four seamer, 27%.
Whoa. Okay.
Sinker. Sinker's 33%. Cutter is 21%. Four seamer, 27%. Curveball, 32%. Changeup is 17%. Hold on. Like, how is that happening? And really, to me, it's. He's commanding as well as I've seen. And this is kind of why I talked about in April. What Vargas really is, are these guys that have good enough stuff that if they can command it, they are going to be good pitchers. If you can command super well, doesn't matter really what your stuff is. It just has to be not the worst thing ever. You will perform in the majors. Location matters more than anything.
I know it's the easiest kind of reference, but it's Hendricks, right? With no stuff that couldn't break a pane of glass. But when he's on, he had Cy Young caliber seasons.
Perfect. So that is what Suarez is kind of doing now. And he's inducing all this poor contact. I don't think that the sinker and the four seamer are going to be able to hold on to that. But maybe in some way. I mean, sinker actually has been a routinely good ICR pitch. Four seamer was 44% last year. Changeup was 40%, 32%, 44%, now 17%. And I think there's really your smoking gun. Of just what is really pushing Ranger Suarez right now is that his changeup feel is just great. Maybe we're going to read something that says like Suarez changes changeup grip and he learned it from Sanchez or something like that and really fix this really. I do think that there is still some luck of the fastballs for Suarez. I think the biggest issue I have is I'm not even saying like if I said that Suarez is just not going to do this and whatever, he wouldn't be 40 even. He'd be lower.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a great point.
And like it's funny to see everyone upset about this ranking because you look at the top 20, it's like, all right, look, like I'm not going to put him over Zach Gallen or Kevin Gausman or Aaron Nola or Chris Sale. And like, come on, fine. So we go to tier 3. Well, Kyle Bradish is about to do it. And like Sonny Gray is dope. And Dylan Cease, everyone wants me to raise him higher. So fine. Bailey Ober has been amazing since his first start. And Framber Valdez is Framber Valdez. Okay, fine. So I can't do that. It's already top 25 now. Then he gets like, well, it's Kikuchi who's absurd right now. It's Justin Steele. Ronel Blanco, who actually looks sustainable, what he's doing. Yu Darvish has been absurd. Yeah, please.
I just want to bring you back to Kikuchi because that's another lefty who's kicking butt and doing a lot of things, but there's a lot more believability in it. I say that as somebody who has been very nervous about him, right? I get irked by the high home run guys. He's suppressing the home runs. I think his raw stuff, though, is better than Suarez's. So I understand that there. So I think that's an easy comp to just kind of look at both of them and say, who's got the more believability going forward? Yeah, it is Kikuchi for me. So continue on with your list of guys.
Kikuchi's four seamer is 97th percentile flatness and 70th percentile IVB and 86th percentile extension and 84th percentile velocity.
Holy smokes, man.
It's 90th percentile PLV. Like, he's figured out how to use his fastball. This used to be like an average-ish pitch. He's just made it better. Increase the vert, improve the location, increase the velocity. Like, hey, buddy, what's up? My whole point really is like these are all guys. Michael King's obviously killing it now. Like he's becoming the thing that's more sustainable to me. Cutter Crawford has three pitches that are fantastic. I'm going to put Zach Eflin underneath Ranger Suarez. That's another conversation. Paul Skenes has to be ranked above him. Above Suarez. Christian Scott should be, in my view. Maybe not Walker Buehler. And I dropped him this week. I believe it or not, Mackenzie Gore is better than Ranger Suarez. But I mean, I guess the biggest pushback I could see is like, if you want Suarez at 35 ahead of like the Scott, Buehler, Gore, Crochet, Bryce Miller, fine. That's okay.
Sure.
But he's not an ace, guys. I would love for this to continue the entire year. And as he continues to, we increase it. But as of right now, May 14th, we can't do that.
I think that's totally fair.
Anything you want to add there?
No, I think that's very, very well said.
Cool. All right. We have to get going to the games. So we're going to do that after this break. All right, Spore. So hit us. Where are we at scoreboard wise?
All right. So after last week, we are still in the same exact spot. We added points, but our split is still the same, which is you up by a couple points or 1 point? 1 point. Nick has 13. I have 12. So if you look at last week, real quick rundown. Streamers of the week, 20% or lower at Fantasy Pros. Logan T. Allen, that's the Cleveland one, 16% versus the White Sox, got 19 points for Nick. That's a winner right there. Bryce Wilson for your boy, 4% versus St. Louis, 1 point.
Oh, yeah. He just walked so many guys, and it was so annoying.
Just got away from him there. Sit of the week, 50%+ at Fantasy Pros, a relative stud that we're saying, hey, beware of. Nick blasted a grand slam here because not only did he get -1, and I know he's not happy about it because he doesn't like when players do poorly, but credit where it's due. He kicked butt here. Jose Barrios, -1 at Philly. Big regression game. Nick nailed it. I will say my Luis Severino, 10.5 at Atlanta. If you sat that, you're certainly not mad you missed that, but I don't get a point for that. That's pretty medium. Star of the week, 50% or lower at Fantasy Pros. Kind of another streamer that we're trying to say, hey, they're going to be really studly. Yeah. Andrew Abbott, 11 at the Giants, 32% rostered, 11 points for Nick. Not bad, but not quite what we're looking for. But my Luis Gil, 25% at Tampa Bay, 20.5 points. Bingo, winner there. Then the one game matchup. Another goodie. Both played really well. I just happened to have a standout start, whereas his guy, Yusei Kikuchi, was just good. So 17.6 points for Kikuchi, 28.2 for Joe Ryan. He went berserk. So 2-2, making it 13-12 as we go into this week's game.
This is the best because we're just completely right there. It's going to be like this entire year, I'm sure.
I think so.
So let's get to streamers here. My streamer of the week is Cooper Criswell against the Rays. I think he's looking really good with his pitch separation. Has a cutter that's actually doing the Cannibal McSanchez at the top of the zone. And then you have the changeup, sweeper, sinker kind of stuff down. That works for me. And the Rays are not a good offense. You could escape with another win here. So I'm going Cooper Criswell at 7% rostered. Who is your streamer of the week, Paul?
I like that one, by the way. I'm actually going to be a little bit of a homer here and go with Casey Mize. And I was double homer because my pivot would have been Reese Olson tonight against Miami. I was just picking on those Marlins against my Tigers here. But I like what Casey Mize has been doing. There's been some bumps, but watching him, I feel pretty good about where he's at coming off this TJ. And so definitely like him against the Marlins at home. And hopefully we can hit Trevor Rogers.
When are people going to have Mize and Olson rostered above 30%?
I don't get it. The only thing, and this is kind of my perfect player this year, is that Olsen's literally 0-4.
I know.
So I know that's frustrating, but you got to take the 2.52 ERA and the 1.12 whip, folks. 35 Ks in 39 innings isn't terrible.
Ratios. And I was just like, he's really good.
Yeah, you know, because you watch, I mean, you know the fundamentals of how well he's pitching.
And like, yeah, and the thing is, it's like we're both on the same page, guys. Oh, the 0-4.
Flaherty's 0-3 and Mize is 1-1. So you got three guys there. Yeah.
Get out of here.
You got three guys with Flaherty, Olson, and Mize who are pitching very well, eligible, like rosterable in all formats. Flaherty and Olson, I think you have to be starting in all formats. Mize is more of a team streamer. Yeah. They are 1-8. And that right there is the Tiger season in a nutshell. If things have broken a little bit more with the offense, I think we'd be 5-6 games over 500. Instead, they're 21-20 because of it.
Absolutely. So, sieve of the week. This is 50% or rostered more in Fantasy Pros. We try and go for the guys that we like. Okay, actually, maybe this you have them on your teams, but you know what? Maybe you want to be cautious. Both of our guys are against the Dodgers.
Yep.
Yours is Nick Lodolo. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we didn't get cute here with fading the Dodgers. Lodolo is a ride I think you have to ride most of the time. I've been saying this about he and Hunter Green, but Hunter Green's like the premium version, and Lodolo is more of like the Kirkland brand version, which, hey, Kirkland, very useful, very solid, but you don't have to go with him every start. For me, I think you do have to start Hunter Green everywhere all the time. You can be a bit more cautious with Lodolo. I think you sit this one out against the Dodgers. He has pitched well, 334, 0.94. And I know some people that love Lodolo. Like when you love your guy, you want to start him against those tough matchups. I get it because I've done that stuff before. But the prudent move is to sit Lodolo here against the Dodgers. I think it just makes sense. And even if he goes 6 innings, 1 run, you just say process over results.
Yeah. I mean, it's also, you should always be happy that guy does well on your bench.
Exactly.
It's way better than the opposite, right?
Yep. Because then if you have...
just sit everybody all the time.
If no one cooks on your bench, you don't really have a great bench, right?
Exactly.
And so you don't have useful players. So that's a great point to make. You're also fading the Dodgers. You're fading the Dodgers with who I believe is a bona fide ace. But again, if you're going to make any skips here and try to really sculpt your ERA, isn't this the time to maybe sit Logan Webb, especially as he's been... Now, he bounced back against Cincy, but the two starts before that were a little bumpy. What have you been seeing out of Logan Webb of late?
We got to have a conversation more about Logan Webb because...
I'm definitely down for that.
It, you know, it's a 338 ERA, so I'm glad that that's happened. 3-4, he's going the innings and all. It's a 139 whip. And the hit per nine is over 10 at the moment. BABIP is higher. He's not allowing home runs. That's what's saving his ERA. And whenever you see an ERA and whip split like that, like it's a good ERA, but a horrendous whip, you know it's just home runs, guys.
Exactly.
That's what that means. So what's going on? And it's the changeup is getting hit more. I think people are actually sitting changeup more than ever because the ICR on this was 31% last year. I mean, it was so good. And like locations aren't really that much worse. If anything, it's better in some ways than last year. But the ICR, 15 points higher. It's essentially like 14 points higher to 45%. That's really bad, especially for a changeup and especially for the pitch that is supposed to do everything for you.
Exactly.
Because the sinker is the called strike machine that allows the changeup to eat, right? So I'm worried about this. The sweeper and slider are just not earning many strikes. We have 55% strike rate on the sweeper right now. Not what you want it to be. I'm just really, really cautious about this. There's more balls in play against this changeup now. 11th percentile ball in play percentage on the changeup, which is 28%. And then lower is better. Lower is generally worse because you want to prevent the possibility of not being a strikeout. But I mean, you can say whatever you want with ball in play percentage. We have actually something called IPR, which we haven't really done an article on, which is ideal pitch result. Essentially, that's just a ratio based on... saying, look, do you throw pitches that get you closer to strikeouts or not? If you allow ball in play, that is not your ideal pitch because it opens the opportunity for bad things to happen.
Yeah.
And of course, balls are bad. IPR is generally around like 0.5 or so for stuff. Okay. For changeups, though, they're actually lower and they're generally more in play pitches. So like it's actually 0.23. And when you think about it that way, when you're a changeup focused guy like Logan Webb, you're going to have a ton of balls in play on your changeup. And if your changeup is allowing bad contact, there it is. Mm-hmm. There is your, you know, everything that's going on. Like 20% ball in play percentage is so high. That's over a quarter of his changeups are in play. And when nearly half of them are good contact for the batter, you're going to have 10 hits per game, right? So something's got to be fixed there. His IPR on the changeup last year was actually a 0.5 as opposed to a 0.25 that it is now. Like he was actually getting either strikes or foul balls or not really the same kind of destruction essentially against them. So something to think about. 26% CSW last year on the changer for Logan Webb, 21% now. Now he gets the Dodgers. If there's a team that's going to prep for this, like and know about this changeup and attack it, it's probably the Dodgers. So if he has a bad start there, it's going to be a roundup title. It's going to be a drop out of his aces going to ace tag for me, I think.
Uh-oh.
I know it's the Dodgers, but it's just, this is a foreboding thing. So Civ of the Week for me is Logan Webb.
Well said there.
We've got two more. Oh, thank you. That's very kind. Two more here. Star of the Week. Who's your star?
My star of the week is getting a little bit of a dicey matchup, but I love this guy. I was in on the buyback this year in terms of theoretically. I did not actually get him this week in the main event because it was super expensive to pick up Taj Bradley.
Yeah.
But I did want to stay committed despite kind of the modest output last year. Still really believe in this kid. What is he, 23, maybe 24, still very young. Still has crazy upside. Yeah, age 23, had a great first start. Going to Boston, not easy, but I'm going to go ahead and go for him. He's only 24% rostered. I think he needs to be rostered in 12s and very much on the table in 10s as somebody who could be a game changer. In fact, he could be instrumental in kind of turning Tampa Bay season around. We've talked about how they've been a little underwhelming, and he could be a catalyst for them kind of getting back to where we expected them to be, which is, you know, well above 500. They're sitting 21-21 right now. So Taj Bradley, 24%. Very available, very much want him on the roster.
Yeah.
How about you?
Love that. Yeah, Taj Bradley also went six innings and I had like that 90 plus pitches. It's huge.
Yep.
He didn't really do that last year.
And that's why he went for $300 out of $1,000 in main event bids.
I'm kind of regretting the fact that I was as low as I was on Taj in the list. And I feel like I should have been more aggressive on it. So I love that call. Heaney is mine. And
Andrew Heaney, yes.
He has not, Andrew Heaney has not really been focused on, because everyone's like, oh, it's Andrew Heaney. He is what he is. But the thing is, even the last, like, I want to say five starts, including Atlanta and Seattle beforehand, he was going Blake Snell blueprint. And that's kind of cool. And what I mean by that is four seamers upstairs, sliders and changeups down. And mm-hmm. he's done it for starts now. And I remember even in Coors, I was like, guys, this is my stream pick of the day. When 8Ks, 2 runs, 5 innings. And he continues that trend.
One homer there too. In fact, one homer in May across 3 starts for Heaney right now. And that's always his biggest issue. Yeah. And, you know, going to Colorado, terrifying. You kept the reco on him because the Rockies aren't doing anything. And I will say this, little point out here. At Oakland, you love pitching there, right? I'm not saying you wouldn't have started him.
No.
They're hitting bombs this year. So I'm going to give them some credit for that. So I'm not saying anything to take away from it. I'm saying that that's going to be another little credit for Heaney because he kept them homer free. They're fourth in the league in homers, Oakland is.
That's so,
so that's not a bad little run there for Heaney here. And he is widely under rostered. He's also 0-4 and he's on a good team. So even he's getting the rotten win situation. Now they're 22-21, but I mean, good team in terms of their outlook. I still believe them to be one of the upper caliber teams. So I like that recommendation. That's against the Angels with Heaney.
Yeah. And what's crazy too, with like Andrew Heaney quickly put is 24% ICR on the four seamer all of a sudden after being that's like huge. A detriment for him.
Yeah.
He's locating it super well upstairs and he's getting more fly balls and fewer line drives. With that
that's
pitch,
fantastic.
Which is essentially those are turning into pop-ups, which are then turning into more outs. But the changeup, this is crazy, Spore. This is absolutely bonkers to me. Better ICR in it. He's allowing balls in play. Remember, I was just talking about with Logan Webb, his IPR and everything like that. IPR is literally zero because we have it as a ratio, or not as a ratio, but you actually have it as a number, just like pretty much scales. No, he like doesn't get CSW on his changeup. His ball and play percentage is 32% on his changeup. It's a 16% CSW on his changeup. He throws it, he has a 46% O swing on it and doesn't get whiffs on it. So guys are like swinging out of the zone on this thing and then just getting outs.
That's
nuts. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah.
It's wild. I don't know if that's going to really stick around. I mean, it's ex-BABIP is like 302. But it's not getting in the air. It's not leaving the park. As not a single one has actually left the park. So it's kind of interesting, something to follow there with Heaney's changeup. I think it's because everyone's going for that fastball now because it's upstairs more consistently, and then that changeup is becoming more effective as well, and they're committed on that, and they go down. But Andrew Heaney, I hope this works out against the Rockies. And I'm sorry, not the Rockies, the Angels. And we have a fun matchup this week. I love this guy. Spore does me such a solid. He writes out all the potentials of like 8 guys or so. And I go through and go, no, that one is a pretty, no. Then there's one that we found. And I said, hey, who do you have? It's the Phillies versus the Nationals. It's Christopher Sanchez versus Mackenzie Gore. And who do you have?
I have Christopher Sanchez. And there's nothing better than, you know, a lot of these we like. We could probably make the case for both sides if we had to, if we had to PTI it, but that's a dated reference now, by the way.
Yeah, it is. I got you. Yeah. Pardon the interruption.
Pardon the interruption. Excellent show. I love Tony Kornheiser. So but anyway, with Sanchez, a couple lefties here, very interesting guys. Sanchez hasn't quite been where I've wanted him to be this year. We've seen, I think, some inconsistencies with the changeup, which is supposed to be his top dog pitch there. The swing strike rate's gone down a bit, which has been a bummer. I will say the biggest issue for me is the near 2.5xing of his walk rate. So I do have some concerns there, but all in all, I'm still bought in. I still think he can work through it. The trade-off with the walks has been that the home runs have come way down. Now, I don't know if that's purposeful. I've actually only seen, believe it or not, despite liking Sanchez a good bit, I've only seen 2 of his starts. So maybe I need to make a point to go back and review some. But the home run rate, due in large part to the 4% homer to fly ball, is down to 0.21. So that is a trade-off that I can live with right now, and it's kept the results in check. But the 150 whip is looming and a little bit nerve-wracking. I like him to start getting back on track here. Needs to get the changeup working more consistently. Honestly, all three pitches, I think, need to be better for him. The fastball and the changeup are the key drivers. And at least in the starts that I watched, the changeup wasn't where it needed to be. So I'm looking for Christopher Sanchez to kind of get going here against a game Nats team. This team does not roll over and just give you an easy dub. They will give Philly some fits, especially with Mackenzie Gore pitching for them. So I like Sanchez.
Sanchez, oh man, is this changeup going to do the thing or not? O-swing is down 10 points this year.
That's been and that's really inconsistency.
Some games it's there, some games it's not.
Yep.
And that's really, I think, the biggest problem there. Ball and play percentage, we're talking about with the changeups and being like 25 to 30%. You want it to be in play for Sanchez. Just 16%. And it's on the lower side. Actually, it was 16% last year. So actually, maybe that is something that is good for him. But okay. O-swing being higher last year, not this year, is very, very strange.
They're not chasing.
We want to, you know, but they're, you know, batting average is 190 despite a 314 BABIP. I mean, that's because, of course, he's still getting some strikeouts with the pitch. 23 strikeouts so far on changeups for Christopher Sanchez. So it's just so dependent on that. And hopefully it does come through here for you. I'm going to go with my guy, Mackenzie Gore. His four-seamer is elite. It truly is elite. 96 percentile PLV for us.
Are we seeing a breakout? Is this the foundation of a breakout here for Gore?
100%. Okay, 95 mile per hour fastballs before. Now it's 97.
Yep.
Four-seamer is actually upstairs. It's more consistently upstairs than it used to be. Highlock, I know you see 51%. No. Look at it recently. It is doing the thing. I am so excited. I want to say that's Sean Doolittle's thoughts in his head. I don't know. Do the thing, Doolittle. It's great. The biggest question really is just, all right, are the slider changeup and curve going to step up enough? Mm-hmm. I need to see lots of strikes with those. And it's good to see 62% strikes on this curveball, but the slider to me is the real last piece. It is so nasty. It is 91, 92 on this. And if he locates it in the zone just enough, like down and glove side, like this should be a nullifier to lefties. It should be an absolute destructor of right-handed batters. And he's not quite doing it consistent enough yet. But man, once he starts doing that, the sky's the limit. Not to mention, I think everyone forgets, Mackenzie Gore's schedule has been so rough.
Yes.
Sure, he had Pittsburgh in his first game and whatever. He had the Phillies in his second. And I actually don't really think like that was him yet. But it's been Pittsburgh, Philly at Oakland. You can say whatever you want about Oakland, but that was in April. So that was his great game, 11 Ks. Fine. Houston, Dodgers, Texas, Jays, Fenway. And then he gets the Phillies. And he still has a 29% strikeout rate with a 3.38 ERA and a 15% swing strike rate.
Well, and you know what's been impressive is that Mackenzie Gore has been able to work around the high hit rate. Do you see that coming down? 396 BABIP, which is crazy. 10.1 hits. You think that's going to start?
Plus 15 hit luck.
There you go.
That's not sweeper stuff, guys. That's just nope. Mm-mm.
So Gore, you know, this is why, this is a great example of why, like, we stay bought in on guys like this, right? You know, we all have our own, right? There's a heavy group of these types of guys that are live arms, that have prospect pedigree, and we all kind of pick and choose the ones that we buy into. And they don't all break. They don't all break through eventually. But it's why you stay bought in on your guys for the hopes that they start to put it together the way Mackenzie Gore has been. So I am very interested in this. I cannot wait to see this start. I will be watching this start, like, you know, not on replay or anything as it's happening, because I like both these young lefties, Christopher Sanchez and Mackenzie Gore. And that will be on Saturday.
Can't wait for that. It's going to be a great time. But I think, Spore, that is it. Our fire has looked at us and gone, why are you still here? It is dark. It is dark. I can't even look at, I don't know what color your robe is anymore. So, so it's time for bed. It's time for us to continue on with our day. And I thank you so much for joining us. Spore, what are you working on the next week?
Well, I'm finishing up those SP rankings, because even though they were more or less set, once you have a weekend plus Monday of games, I got to dig back in there. It's just, I can't trust it without reassessing everything. So I want to get everything reordered there, make sure everything's good to go. Obviously, some injuries have cropped up too. So that'll be out, like I said, this week, locked and loaded. SP chart every day over at Fangraphs every day during the week, Monday through Friday there. And then the podcast, Sleeper in the Bust. And of course, my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/spore, where we do a box score show, usually 3 times a week. Didn't do Monday this week because I was coming off the travel and, you know, a bit fatigued there. So yeah, thanks so much for having me on the Fireside.
Oh, of course, Spore. I mean, thank you all so much for listening. My name is Nick Pollock. And Spore, it's always nice hanging with you by the fire.
Thanks for listening to today's Fireside Chat with Paul Spore and Nick Pollock. Follow both Paul and Nick on Twitter at Spore and at PitcherList.